And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the mighty 690K GGF. Kyle High with you this morning. Hope you are having a fantastic day out there. Currently 63 degrees outside, feels perfect out there right now. We'll get up to a high of around 83, 84 degrees today. Then we get back into the 90s starting tomorrow. And joining me in studio this morning for Green Side Up, we have Holly Miner and a David Scrantz. And ladies, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good.
It's good to have you guys in today, and we're going to go ahead and start with Holly this morning. But before we get to your main subject today, you do have a workshop coming up, do you not?
I do. I actually have 5 weeks of workshops coming up in various cities, and so they are Tuesday and Thursday evenings. All the workshops are from 5:30 to 8:30 in the evening, so if you work, you can come on out and join us. Our first workshop starts August 17th in Parsons. And then August 31st, we have our workshop series in Independence, and September 7th in Girard, September 14th, we go to Fredonia, and September 21st, we're in Pittsburgh. And to register for those classes and to find out more information on the dates and the times and the locations, call 620-331-2690.
And those are food preservation workshops, yes. Which kind of leads into what we're going to talk about today. And topic today, you're talking food safety and also canning. Food safety, definitely a big thing. In fact, I think I talked about the bologna or the ham I had in my refrigerator a few weeks ago. I tossed that out. So
yeah, well, that's good.
But anyway, we're talking about today, though, food safety and canning. And yes. just kind of give us some of the things that we need to look out for food safety.
Well, the reason why we can our food is because we want to save it for being able to consume it later. And so in that process, we want to make sure that we are doing the correct procedures to make sure that the food is safe. So you can heat food up and put it in a jar, and the jar will seal when the jar cools. But does that really make the food safe? No. What makes the food safe is processing it using the correct method. And there's two methods that we use when we are preserving food. There's a water bath canning method where we put the jars in a boiling cauldron of water and process them for the amount of time that is recommended. And then the other method, the water bath method is used for high acid foods such as fruits, pickles, jams and jellies. And then the other method that we use is a pressure canning method, and that method is used for low acid foods, so those foods that need to be processed at a higher temperature. Water boils at 212 degrees. The pressure canner reaches temperatures of 240 degrees or above, and for low acid foods we definitely need to reach that temperature. So those are the two processes that we use. I listened to I had a customer come in the other day, and they were talking about, they had talked to a lady that had told them that you really don't need to even process your food. You just put it in a jar and turn it upside down on the countertop and it seals. That is true. It does seal. But is that jar safe? And that's what we really want to focus on, is the food going to be safe to eat later? And that's why we can food, is to eat it later. So if you're not processing the food according to a tested recipe that's been proven to be safe after it's set on the shelf for a while, then their food isn't going to be good. So we need to make sure we're using the processes that are going to assure the food is safe to eat later.
So again, those two processes. So you were saying, foods that are high in acid go through one way, but canning foods low in acid. What are some foods that are kind of low in acid?
So those would be our vegetables, corn, carrots, beans, peas, those kinds of foods. Any meats, so chicken, fish, ground beef, ground pork, regular pork that's not ground, regular beef that's not ground. A lot of fish products, those kinds of things need to be pressure canned. Those are all low acid foods. And the reason that we pressure can those low acid foods rather than do the water bath is that there are six items that help bacteria grow. And we call those fat Tom. So it's the food itself, the acidic level of the food, the time that the food is left out of refrigeration, and the temperature of the food. So the time and temperature. Most bacteria need oxygen to grow, and then moisture. So if you have food in a jar, it's sitting on the shelf, it's room temperature, bacteria grows faster at room temperature, has all the time in the world for that bacteria to grow. If it's a low acid food, the most concerning bacteria that we think about when we think of low acid foods is the Clostridium botulinum bacteria, or botulism is what we, the common name that we know it as. And that food, that bacteria does not need oxygen to grow. So we know we talked about having oxygen. Well, in a sealed canning jar, it's sealed, so it's not going to gain oxygen from the air, you know, to be able to grow. And botulism doesn't need that oxygen to grow. So it's anaerobic. It sits in that jar. It's a perfect environment for that to grow. So if you're not processing that in a pressure canner, you could be setting yourself up for illness later. And one thing that a lot of people say, well, I'll just smell it and I'll just taste it and see if it's safe, or I can look at it and tell if it's spoiled. Well, with botulism, you cannot. It's odorless, it's colorless, and it's tasteless. So you would never know until you got sick, anywhere from 12 to 72 hours later. And if there's high amounts of botulism in there, it could kill you. So otherwise, it produces things like dizziness, headache, stomach upset, and then eventually death.
And also, that's not one of those things you can just, like, you can't just go, oh, well, I'll just cook it out. That doesn't work that way, does it?
No, it produces a toxin. So the botulism bacteria itself produces a heat protective spore around it. So boiling it in a water bath canner doesn't destroy that heat protective spore. The only way we can destroy that is to get that food to 240 degrees on the inside of that jar. And so we use tested recipes that the USDA has tested. They've been proven to be safe. The science is behind those recipes to make sure that we are heating that food up. Anytime that you're using a recipe, if it says to chop the food, we want to make sure we're chopping the food. If it says to leave it half or whole, we want to leave it half or whole. Those recipes are set up to be effective exactly as they're written. So this is one time that we don't want to alter a recipe when we are doing our canning processes. We want to make sure that we're following the recipe exactly, we're using the exact ingredients that it says. You know, if we are making salsa and we have a little bit of extra onion that we chopped, some people will throw that extra onion in there. Well, that affects the acidity level of that food, and so it makes it a lower acid food rather than a high acid food, which our salsas would be. And so that could affect whether the bacteria is killed or not in that water bath process. So we just want to make sure we're following those recipes, following a tested recipe from a reliable source. Some of those sources are the National Center for Home Food Preservation, the Ball Blue Book, there's a recipe book called So Easy to Preserve by the University of Georgia. That's a great source. I use that book as a reference when people call me and have questions. I also use the National Center for Home Food Preservation quite a bit because that's a great source, and that's an online source. And then there's a complete guide to home canning that is put out by the USDA. That's another very good source. And that is a free downloadable off of the National Center for Home Food Preservation's website. So that's a great way to get that. And then Kansas is very fortunate to have the Rapid Response Center at the university. And so KSRE's Rapid Response Center has all sorts of information on it related to canning specifically. And there's some pretty neat videos on there. So if you have time, grab your computer, get on that website, and look up some of that information. There's a couple new things that are out, have come out in the last year or so. And one is elderberries. And a lot of people like to can elderberry jelly. And we have recently learned that elderberries are a low-acid food, so canning those and making jelly and water bath canning them is not going to destroy the bacteria. So that's making jelly is okay, but not canning the juice to save for later to make jelly. So we want to make sure that we're following recommendations for the elderberries, because that's a new one, something different. A lot of our recipe books will still have elderberry jelly in it, but they should be not using it to can just the juice itself. If you're going to do that, freeze the juice. You know, freeze it and use it that way. The other one that is very new, it's this year, there's a new variety of peaches out, and they are white peaches. And so we want to make sure that those white peaches, there is no canning process that's been tested for white peaches. There was a lady that had called into the Rapid Response Center not too long ago that she had bought peaches earlier this year. She had canned them using the yellow peach recipe, and all of her lids were popping off, and she couldn't figure out why. And it's because they are a low-acid food. So water bath canning them did not destroy the bacteria, so that bacteria was expanding in that jar, and it caused the lids to come unsealed. So that's a good example of a food that is not safe to eat. And so she ended up having to, the recommendation was that she throw away all of that food because it wouldn't be safe.
I hit the wrong button there. So that's wild to think about, just the lids just popping off. I can just imagine you're sitting in the house, all of a sudden you hear that and you're like, what is that? And you go in there and you see lids have popped off. I mean, so I'm guessing you're, like you're saying, white peach is kind of a new thing, and that basically they were stored the wrong way, correct?
Right. So again, there's no tested recipe to can white peaches. So freezing them or drying them would be the proper method. Freezing is great because you can just pull them out of the freezer, thaw them out, and then eat them that way. And that's a great way to preserve those kinds of foods. And that's a very acceptable method of preserving food is using the freezer method. So.
And one more question here before we go, before we take a break. But the question I want to know about is, with canned food, probably depends on the food, but generally, how long should you keep a canned food before tossing it, before you think it may be no good? Obviously, I know it varies from food to food, but as a general area.
A general rule would be about a year. So after that point, the quality of the food in the jar starts to deteriorate. You might lose some of the nutritional value. The jars of food that are canned for longer than a year start to turn dark, and so the appeal of the food is not as good, because a bright red beet will just turn almost black if you leave it in the jar long enough. I actually have a sample of that I take around to classes. There's one other thing that I wanted to share. You know, you said you sit around and listen to the jars pop. Well, a lot of times you don't even hear those lids pop off. So, you know, it might be something that you go down to get it and it looks like it's sealed. It's not oozing. It's not leaking. But you always want to test to make sure that the jar is still sealed before you serve it to your family. So,
all right. So some good stuff there for you to kind of check out. So, Holly, if anybody has any questions for you about what we've talked about today, canning and food safety, how can they get a hold of you?
They can call me at the Independence office at 620-331-2690, or they can email me at haminer@ksu.edu.
All right. Well, Holly, thank you so much for coming on today. We appreciate it. We will also talk about the food preservation class before the start of our next segment, but I appreciate you coming in today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. This is a topic I'm very passionate about.
And I definitely love hearing about it, because food safety, definitely a big thing, because like you said, it was something, you know, as simple as, you know, something that should be canned or should be put in a jar could lead to, getting botulism and could lead to death. So, yeah, I can see why you're very passionate about it. It's very important.
It's an important topic. Yep. Anybody can call me. I'm glad to answer questions.
All right. Sounds good. And before we go to break, David Skrantz with us this morning. And David, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Doing well. Thank you.
All right. Well, we're just going to kind of get a preview of what you're going to be talking about here in the second part of our program.
Yes, coming up after the break, I will be talking about evaluating sheep and goats in preparation for breeding season to make sure they're in good condition before you turn your bucks and rams in with your does and ewes.
All right, so some good stuff coming up here in the second part of our program. So be sure to keep it locked here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. Currently 65 degrees outside, and it's now time to check out the second part of our program here, Green Side Up, on this hump day morning. And before we get to a Davin, coming back to Holly real quick for one moment. And Holly, you got some workshops coming up, correct?
Yes, we have some food preservation workshops. They are starting the 17th of August, and they go through the 23rd of September. Call the office at 620-331-2690 to find out more information about those and to register. Those are free workshops due to a grant that we've received, and so we're able to offer those for free, but we'd love to have you come out, and we just have a lot of fun in those workshops, so come join us.
All right, so it will be a lot of fun. And now let's go ahead and get to Davin. Davin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing good, thank you.
All right, well, Davin, we're going to talk about goats and sheep today and for the breeding season. So my first question for you is, when should goat and sheep producers start planning for breeding season?
Yeah, so fall is quickly approaching. We were just talking a little bit earlier this morning before the show how with these cooler temperatures the past couple days, it already kind of feels like fall. And with fall comes breeding season for sheep and goats. Most producers will breed their animals in the fall, specifically sheep and goats, to kid in the spring. And some producers, if they're breeding sheep and goats or maybe those 4-H'ers, they're wanting to breed them to kid at the right time or lamb at the right time to raise those lambs and kids up for their fair projects next year. So we just finished up 3 of the county fairs in our district, and Crawford County is this week, and then we have Interstate next week. So although we're just wrapping up fair season here, folks are probably already starting to think and plan for their projects next year. So because of that, August is a good time to start making plans for breeding season, or if you are wanting to have lambs and kids the perfect age for county fairs, you're probably already have made plans to turn those bucks and rams out with the does and ewes this month. So if you haven't done so already, now is the time that you want to evaluate your sheep and goats to make sure they are in good condition before breeding. Does and ewes that have good body condition are more likely to be bred and successfully have lambs or kids in the spring.
So how do you determine if goats and sheep are in good condition?
Yeah, so there's a couple different things you want to look at. One, which I know I've talked about before, it's something that you want to be evaluating year-round, is if they need to be dewormed, if they have a heavy parasite load. So to do that, you can look at their inner eyelid color, and if it's a light pink to white color, then you're going to want to deworm them specifically for the barber pole worm. Also, if goats have a rough hair coat or if sheep are starting to lose wool, that's another sign of internal parasites. And then also if they're skinny, if they have poor body condition, that's another thing to look for. So you'll want to evaluate them for that. And then you'll also want to evaluate their body condition score specifically of goats and sheep to determine if they need to either gain weight before breeding season or lose weight before breeding season. So body condition refers to the fleshiness of an animal, how much fat cover the animal has. And to know the body condition score of a goat or a sheep, you can feel over the ribs and on either side of the spine by pressing down with your fingers to determine the amount of fat cover a goat or sheep has. So you can evaluate the fat cover over that animal's ribs, and then also place your hand across the top of their back in that loin area. And then you're pretty much just seeing how easy it is to feel their spine, to feel that backbone. So after feeling the amount of fat cover, a body condition score can be given. So for goats and sheep, body condition scores are given on a scale of 1 to 5. So a smaller scale than cattle body condition scores. And 1 is considered emaciated. So that animal is very underweight. It will be super easy to feel their ribs and their backbone. And then a score of 5, which is the other end of the scale, means that animal is very overweight. And when they get to that 4 or 5 body condition score, it will be very hard or impossible to feel their backbone. And this is important because if does and ewes especially become too thin, failure to reproduce or low twinning rates and low weaning weights of those kids and lambs can result if does and ewes are underweight. This is why it's important to evaluate their body condition score before you're wanting to turn those bucks and rams in with them, so you have time to give them extra feed to increase their weight before breeding. And on the other side of that, if they are too fat, if they're over conditioned, it can also result in problems. Although most of these problems you'll see appear closer to when they're kidding and lambing, and these can come up in pregnancy toxemia or them having trouble giving birth because those kids and lambs are a little bit too big because those does and ewes had that extra body condition, so then they'll need assistance delivering those kids and lambs.
So you said that the scale is on between 1 to 5. So what is the ideal body condition for does?
Yeah, for does and ewes, which if folks are unfamiliar with sheep and goat terms, does refers to female goats and ewes refers to female sheep. So the ideal body condition score for them is 2.5 to 3.5 at the beginning of breeding season. If does and ewes have a body condition score lower than 2.5, they need to be placed on, of course, good quality pasture and or hay, and then supplemented with grain to increase their body condition. Grain that has a crude protein level of 10 to 12% is recommended to be supplemented at a rate of 0.5 to 1 pound of grain per head per day for at least 2 to 4 weeks before the start of breeding season. And the amount of time and the specific amount of feed will vary based on just how low their body condition score is. Increasing the amount of grain before breeding season is also sometimes referred to as flushing, and this can increase the lambing and kidding percentage and the numbers of females cycling earlier in the breeding season. So if you hear folks refer to flushing, which is a common term, especially for sheep, it just means increasing the amount of grain those animals are getting before breeding season to help ensure that you have successful kidding and lambing season in the coming spring.
So you said that does and ewes, maybe around 2.5, a little higher, but what about adult bucks and rams? Theirs is probably a little bit different, correct?
Yes, there is a little bit different. So those bucks and rams, those males, you're wanting them to have a little bit higher body condition score going into breeding season. For them, you want them to be a body condition score of 3 to 3.5, because this will be the time of year that those bucks and rams are the most active. And oftentimes it's a little bit easier to focus on those does and ewes, of course, because you're working with them a lot. You've been working with them in the spring, kidding and lambing. Then when you wean those kids and lambs, well, the bucks are kind of off in their own pasture. So it's important to take the time to evaluate them as well in preparation for breeding season. So determine their body condition score just the same way you do those does and ewes. And if bucks and rams are too thin during breeding season, they will have decreased stamina, which can lead to a longer lambing and kidding period. So I know some folks like to have their kidding and lambing periods in a kind of a short time frame, so it kind of all happens at once and then they're done with it for the spring. However, if bucks and rams are over-conditioned, they may also lack vigor to breed large numbers of does and ewes. And then if rams and bucks are too thin, just like the does and ewes, they should be given supplemental feed starting roughly a month before breeding season to increase their body condition and ensure they are in good physical shape. And then also, if you do have a goat or a sheep that is over-conditioned, now would also be the time to put them on a little bit of a diet. So hopefully they lose a little bit of weight to get into that ideal body condition score range before breeding season. And while you're evaluating their body condition score and checking to see if they need to be dewormed, now is also a good time to look at their hooves. Trim their hooves if needed, and then also look for any signs of sores or weird smells that may be indicators of foot rot, and treat those if need be before turning the bucks and rams in with those does and ewes, because this time of year they'll be very active, so you want to make sure their hooves are in good condition as well and you won't have any problems with one coming up lame or anything like that.
All right, so lots of good information on that today, and like you said, a lot of the fairs have already gone on in the Wildcat District, Crawford County going on right now. The Interstate Fair and Rodeo is starting next week, and actually, I think a lot of it, even though the Grandstand event starts a little bit later week, I think it starts on Sunday if I remember right, Sunday or Monday, where a lot of the livestock stuff will start happening, and then that's pretty exciting. I was kind of scaled down last year, but back to full strength this year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So we'll be there on Monday checking in the 4-H inside exhibits in the building. It's just 4-H this year inside the building. Unfortunately, there's no open class exhibits this year, but they'll still be doing the bake sale and everything for the kids. And then, like you were mentioning, those livestock shows will get started as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, especially back with the fair being back at full strength this year. Well, Davin, some good stuff there for you. But if anybody has any questions about what you talked about today, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can reach me by calling the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690, and I would be happy to answer any questions they have.
All right. Well, Davin, thank you so much for coming in today. And Holly, again, thank you for coming in today. We definitely appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.